Welcome to the Sacred Body Podcast, where we explore the embodiment of belonging and the journey to get there. The topics we'll focus on primarily are food, birth, sex, and boundaries. And I'm your host, Stacey Ramsauer. Thank you for listening in to the Sacred Body Podcast. My name is Stacey Ramsauer, and I have a really special guest today, my friend Bill Green. I'm actually friends with Bill through loved ones. Bill's wife, Anna, is one of my dearest friends, most treasured humans in my life. And Bill has also supported my husband through body work. Bill is a structural integration practitioner, as well as a father and a husband, and just, in my experience, a stellar human being. I'm really happy to have you here, Bill.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's nice to be here.
Thank you. And I'm really, I would love to hear a little bit more about how you found your way to body work, as I consider it a vocation. Of course, it's a profession, but it's a special kind of approach to life for sure, especially structural integration. So if you could just tell us a bit about what led you there and how long you've been practicing.
Okay. Well, it's hard to know where to start with the journey, because every piece of my life seems like it's has led me to this moment of the work I do now. But the short version, at least, is I was a home builder, a custom home builder, and had fallen out of love with the work I was doing, and was managing a chronic shoulder injury of my own through massage, and it got to the point where massage wasn't helping, and in the time before that, I had studied health and wellness coaching and gotten certified as a health and wellness coach, and was dabbling in that work, picking up threads from my psychology degree and my interest in pre-med and my interest in religious studies, and just trying to figure out what it is I'm really here to do. And the working with my hands piece was an important part that was missing with just coaching people. And I stumbled across a practitioner and said, you know, I just needed shoulder help. I thought I was going to have to go get an MRI.
Yeah.
And I kept going back. And by the third session, I realized I had to learn what this work was about. It felt so familiar, but I didn't understand what was happening. And within 6 months, I had signed up for school, made space in my life somehow to make it happen, and rolled with it. And 2 years later, I graduated, and that was 4.5 years ago.
Wow.
So it seems so fast. It seems like yesterday. And I finally am at peace in myself in regards to what I do on a day-to-day basis. This work is, I feel like it's my calling and what I am here to do.
That's so awesome.
That feels really good.
Could you please give just a brief background into the principles guiding structural integration? I think it's so fascinating that what you had been doing professionally up to that point was literally building structures. And that point is not lost on me, nor you, I'm sure. But the principles guiding structural integration, and I mean, wow, it's like you went from building the structures to reforming or I don't want to use the word perfecting the structures, but that's kind of what's coming to me. So I'm just going to leave it to you to flesh that out a bit more.
Dr. Ida Rolf discovered and developed this work she called personal structural integration, and that's where the term structural integration comes from. It was Dr. Rolf's belief, as I understand it, that the human body is designed to be a self-supporting mechanism in this world, and being human gets in the way of that. And what I mean by that is that we subconsciously collect and install patterns throughout our life that are stored in our tissue, they're stored in our body, in our soma. And we habituate to these patterns. They just become part of us, they're who we are. But over time, this collection of patterns gets in the way of this self-supporting structure. These patterns can come from injuries, compensations from injuries, things we love to do. They can come from traumas, either physical or emotional, psychological traumas as well. So this work is all about helping release those patterns and bring inherent organization back to the body, back to the structure. If we have proper structure, the idea is that we'll have proper function. Structure and function are linked in a way that can't be taken apart. Back to your thoughts about building. If a wall is leaning, it doesn't hold up the roof as well as a wall that's plumb. And so those same ideas apply to us. And all these patterns are stored in the tissue, in the fascia specifically. And fascial science and understanding what fascia is a burgeoning thing. And we're just scratching the surface. And I think every year there is more information that comes about that sheds light on how this work I do is actually working in the body.
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the other areas of interest for you over the years, religion, psychology, I'm sure being a father, witnessing birth, all these things coming together, I can feel how being a structural integration practitioner is such a beautiful synthesis of all these elements, primarily because of the really esoteric layer of the body, of being human, and going beyond just the mechanical structure, which is where most of us get really stuck when it comes to looking at our bodies. Even in the birth world, right? It's like a series of chemical events. And no, it's not just a series of chemical events. It's so much ancestry. It's so much spirituality. It's so much emotional dynamic. And I'm really fascinated by this piece of like the burgeoning field of studying fascia and body mechanics. What is your sense about why it's so difficult for people to maybe acquiesce to the reality of the subtle body and not get so stuck in just being a biomechanical expert, like, you know, in the yoga field as well?
That's a great question. I know that, you know, Dr. Rolf developed this work over the bulk of her life. And it wasn't until the late 60s that she started teaching others. That was 50 years almost after she got her PhD.
Wow.
So this is like, and that was 50 years ago. And And this work is still not mainstream. It's still in this shadow place, almost, of society.
Yeah, like a
And
corner of the bodywork world. Yeah.
and I think it is because there isn't a good, there isn't a way to pin it down. And it's not just mechanics, that other things are evoked in the client as well as the practitioner during sessions. Things can happen in sessions that make no sense, can be scary, can be out of people's comfort zone. And it also it calls for a demand on the client to change. And I'll be honest with you, I think a lot of us don't want to change because even though we might be miserable in our life in some degree, or dissatisfied or uncomfortable, the thought of changing is scary. And so, yeah, it's not just coming in and trying to think of a good analogy to other types of body work. It's process oriented as well. So one session gives you an idea of what is going on, but to really commit, that's the thing. It's about commitment, because to dabble in this work, it's not the same as committing to a series and committing to something happening.
Process.
Process. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking of so many thoughts, but I'm thinking even of like, in a small sense, a small comparison, like the drop-in yoga class versus committing to a 6-week series, or like ClassPass, right? Which I think is a wonderful invention for lots of reasons, and it's just like th there's a really wonderful quote from a teacher I love. She's talking about this kind of innovation, I suppose, in the yoga world, and like you're playing to the pathology of the culture, which is a one-off series of highs. And even going to get a massage, as much as, as much as a lot of us may go and have a massage and it's really deep and like we have an emotional release or even a yoga class for that matter, it's sort of like I want to go somewhere and check out and have this done to me. I'm tired of participating. And it again, it just like speaks so much to this cultural, I'm gonna use the word malaise, of like, I'm tired, I don't wanna work anymore. Not understanding that by going through this process, we can figure out how to live more simply, how to live in a more nourishing way.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, our society now is so by the moment, instantaneous gratification. All right, what's next? Everything's moving so quickly, and we look for these. I'm gonna check. I need to check out for an hour and feel good for an hour. Maybe the rest of the afternoon, it was a really good massage. I'm back to where I was when I wake up tomorrow, and this work, I look at it as an attempt to let people set themselves free. And I just try to facilitate their process in finding something new in themselves. And Dr. Rolfe's main tenet was human potential. So the idea of if we can be more effortless in our body and more effortless being upright in the world and moving through the world, what else can we do, right? And I was told towards the end of her life and career, she was actually interested in how this work affects groups of people, mm-hmm. Families and working groups, and it just to that idea of potential.
I think that's a huge, so essential point of conversation. One of my teachers and a woman you know, Rochelle Garcia Saliga, and her teaching speaks a lot to the social nervous system.
Yes.
And the value of doing our own healing work as a contribution to our family, to society, and how we co-regulate that just fact of mutual regulation and often unconscious mirroring of body language, and how different it feels to be in the presence of someone who is effortlessly upright. Like, I mean, that's something that I'm not always conscious of, but, you know, even reflecting now on like the feeling I have or have had walking into your home, being with you and Anna together, even, it's like, ah. There's an ease that is certainly contributed to by the fact that, you know, you're invested in staying in your body, maintaining your own uprightness, and we're not like needing to feed off of one another for anything. It just is a shared experience of being.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we're antennas.
Yeah, great word.
That's part of the purpose of our physical structure, and we can say we mimic what's around us, but really we're resonating with what's around us.
Yes.
And every time I give a session to someone, it's putting that out into the field that we're all in, and that is part of the work. It's putting it out there into the bigger field for everyone to have the opportunity to be effortless in their body. That's a really important thing to consider, because as I work with people and work with their tissue, mm-hmm. I really think of what's happening. It's a communication of what I am embodying to them and a transmission of that to them. It's potent.
And just what you described, I mean, I know from my own experience doing a different kind of work, just the level of personal integrity that it takes to be a body worker of this kind. It's steady, diligent work on oneself and staying open to the conversation. But I want to offer to the conversation, Anna and I have talked about this before, it just so happened that my partner was in great need of this kind of body work because he was in so much physical pain. And the emotional transformation that the two of us mutually, like both receiving our own work simultaneously over the course of 4 or 6 months was, I mean, undeniable. I really don't know that we would have healed the things that we were working on had we not both been in process. I mean, it moves me to tears to think about it, and especially because you were such a big part of that. But could you speak a little bit to this about things you've observed, or just, you know, how the work can really soar and even improve exponentially when there is a container for that transformation to happen? Maybe, like, you know, Anna and I have talked about, let me clarify, one person inside of a couple or a partnership getting the work, unless the other person is like way far ahead of them in some regards already. It's sort of like you need, both people need to be doing the work.
Yeah, it can get tricky actually when only one person in a relationship gets the work. You know, but our bodies are a vehicle for our soul, mm-hmm. higher self, whatever word you want to use. I firmly believe that. And when we change the body, when the body is shifting and releasing patterns that are no longer of service, and the individual is able to integrate that work out of the office and out into the world and into their life, you start looking at the world in a different way. Mm-hmm. Start looking at yourself in a different way. This was a very unexpected thing that happened to me when I first received structural integration work. I went in for a shoulder problem. And then 3 months later, I'm having all of these epiphanies and downloads, and I'm looking around at my life and thinking to myself, what am I doing?
Yeah.
What am I doing? And, you know, my own experience, it actually gave me the clarity to make decisions that I had not been able to make around life choices,
right.
Changing careers, moving, changing relationships, and just, it's a quote within the SI Rolfing community that you can expect 3 major life changes if you receive the 10 series. And I do see that over and over again in clients. Mm. Just these things happen. They move, they find a significant other, they get divorced, they have a child, they just, it's very interesting what starts to come to the surface once our antennas are tuned, so to speak. And, you know, life begins to flow again in a different way. It, we become unstuck, so to speak. I think that a lot of times we just get stuck. We get stuck in a pattern. Everything's patterns. And if we can unstick a pattern, it's amazing what can happen.
Yeah, the physical body's orientation to the world is such a real indicator of how we're perceiving anything. I mean, I'm remembering at the end of every single session, it was like a revelation that I could feel myself supported by my own legs. And I never knew before that I didn't have that feeling. And what a radical difference that is, to not be just like my heart shoved forward looking to everybody else to hold me up. No, yeah. I hold myself up. And wow, okay, like I actually don't need this person in my life. I don't need that in my life. I don't need to be so afraid all the time. Like, I'm not trying to make this a PSA for structural integration, but truly, it was a huge contributing factor, I believe, to not only healing my marriage, but me getting pregnant and healing a lot of things related to like that specific fear. Are things ever going to be stable for me? And I'm curious, you know, without making it, like, this isn't by any means a hard and fast rule, but I do find something I'd like to discuss with you in the general self-help world, corner of the world. There are you know, increasingly more and more spaces, and I facilitate a lot of them for women to do this kind of like unshaming work, unwinding work, unlocking of voice and sexual expression. And a good friend of mine who will be a guest on the podcast is creating a business based on integrating the conversation, like having men and women sit down together, having different orientations of people sit together and process the work together. And I'm curious what you find in your practice as far as who's coming to get the work, and knowing from my own personal experience, the way you are able to support people, and particularly men, I just find so invaluable, this tremendous gift. And what is your sense of how to just engage more integrated conversations between men and women to sort of destigmatize this emotional de-armoring? Can you just talk about that?
Yeah, sure. I haven't run the numbers exactly in terms of male-female client, but I know that there's more. I have more female clients than male clients. More females come to this work than males, and I don't find that surprising, to be honest with you. Because I think as a culture in particular, the idea of a man needing help in any regard is looked at as, you know, viewed as weakness, or and you know, oh, I'll get through it, it'll be fine. And I think that still is the case today. Mm-hmm. I know that some men have problems and wouldn't have another man work on them.
Right. Yeah.
As well. And thinking about my own process, my structural integration practitioner was the first male practitioner I ever saw. So anytime I ever needed a massage, it was always from a woman practitioner. And I firmly believe that I would not have received what I received from a female practitioner. Mm. I could have only received what I needed from a man in that regard. And I'm so grateful that I had that experience and that perspective around gender. And gender is, it's real. And there's a reason it's here. So it's such a huge conversation, right?
Right.
But I think the stigmas and the beliefs that we all hold within ourselves regarding gender and what it means to us, we should really be aware of and question from time to time.
Yes. Yeah.
I love hearing about your friend who's going to be doing that work. You know, I consider myself a feminist, I enjoy working with the women in my practice. I feel like I've helped facilitate a lot of great healing work with them. And part of me believes that as much female support there is for the work that females are doing in the world, the wounds are male and female wounds.
Mm-hmm.
And to truly heal them, there needs to be male and female interface in the healing as well. And that's probably going to be the hardest part.
And I don't know if there's, I mean, this is not a, it's almost a rhetorical question of like, do men and women need to be doing the individual work first before it's efficacious to do the integrated work?
Yeah, I just want to clarify what I was saying a minute ago. I think that the work you're speaking of is, it's so important for women to be working with women.
Mm-hmm.
And almost inappropriate for men to be there. And I'm not saying it is, and like you said, it's an individual decision.
Mm-hmm.
On both the practitioner and the client's part. And I think that the males healing males and females healing females is where we are right now in the process of healing as a whole. And I went really big with my comment about males will have to be there for females in the end. It's almost this idea of I have this vision of a battlefield, literally, and the men will have to be there in order to apologize and mm-hmm. for the women to hear the apology, you know, that final piece of healing is where we will need each other. You know?
Yeah. I want to spend some time talking specifically about birth because it's relevant to the work that I do, but also it is a piece of your life experience and such a unique experience. Could you just tell us a little bit about your relationship to experience with birth and the birth world, and we can go from there?
Okay. I was a young father, and my experience started with just kind of going in blindly, so to speak. my wife at the time was interested in birth work and learning about birth, and we had planned a home birth and ended up at the hospital, and my son was born by C-section, and it was very in everything that happened those days, it was the most gentle process, and everyone was so loving, and we felt so blessed how everything unfolded, and of course that everyone was safe and healthy, and it facilitated a lot of healing and a lot of it shined a light on the places that needed to be healed, and my middle son was born at home. And that was just the complete antithesis of what we had experienced the first time, and it was just so beautiful. And then my daughter was born at home 2 years later, and again, just different but amazing experience as well. And along that journey of parenting with their mother, she became a midwife and home birth midwife and was practicing. So birth has been something I've been around my entire adult life, in a close relationship with it. Listening to stories and having ideas bounced off of me, and just kind of learning through osmosis.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel when you, you know, were about to be a father, and what was your impression at that time of home birth? Was it something that you had to be convinced of? Was it something that you had already been exposed to or on board with?
I had not been exposed to it, but it made sense to me and I was on board with it. So I didn't need to be convinced. I was a planned C-section. That's my birth experience.
Mm.
And through the time of pregnancy, we did talk a lot about birth and what birth had been for my wife at the time and for me, and how those experiences affect us our entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we definitely had a dialogue about it. I think that my own shock and awe of becoming a father at that young age, I had my blinders on, so to speak, and wasn't really thinking broadly.
Mm.
And okay, well, what do we need to do then to heal our birth experience, to heal from our birth experience,
yeah,
in order to not affect this birth coming up? In hindsight, being 2020, that's what I missed for me. I can speak for myself.
Well, that's a really profound conversation that I don't, you know, that concept is lost on most people, of the impact of our personal birth experience and how that shapes us, our perceptions, our physiology. And I'm curious how much of that is explicitly spoken to in structural integration versus something that just comes about through intuition, because of course there's a whole field of perinatal psychology, pre and perinatal psychology, and studies done about consciousness beginning at conception, and of course how we're physically emerging into the world is going to have a ripple effect through our growth and experience of the world. But I'd just love to hear you talk a little bit more about birth having a lifelong impact.
The instruction that I received was heavily based on pre and perinatal experience.
Cool.
So it's a major component of my cosmology around structural integration and these patterns that I'm talking about. We're laying down these patterns in ourselves in a subconscious way, an unconscious way, one might even say. And a lot of these patterns are laid down prenatally.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can look at the physical things, such as the shape of mom's uterus and the position of mom's uterus, where the placenta is implanted on the uterine wall. All of these things affect the environment that that growth is occurring in. So everything in nature grows in a spiral. And so depending on what's happening within this environment, it's gonna affect our structure.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have input through mom to the baby for 9 months. It's unfiltered. So whatever outside stuff and whatever mom is experiencing is being passed on to baby. And there's evidence and work that shows how babies are managing those outside, that outside input. in utero.
Yeah.
So there are things happening in that environment of no time. And then suddenly we have this experience that even the births that mom says, oh, it was easy as pie, I'm willing to bet that was still a traumatic experience for baby.
Right.
And then those first moments of life and how all of this sets us up for how we are in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine a home birth that loved ones are around and baby is born naturally, gets to crawl up to mother's breast, is in contact with her skin to skin for 12 hours at least, you know, just peaceful as you can imagine. How that person is going to be in the world, how their nervous system responds to the world, and compare that to a baby that is born with forceps in the hospital and rushed off to a nursery and sees mom here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't have that contact, and how that nervous system is going to be in the world. It's a no-brainer to me, and it's so hard to see these women who they don't. They're not putting it together. And I think a lot of it is because so many of us we've had this experience of hospital birth and not getting what we needed when we were babies. And therefore we have no connection to it. And that's my story.
Right.
I had no connection with mom. I was not breastfed. It was just all of these things that now I can cognitively trace some of my beliefs and behaviors still to this day
back to
those first experiences. And wow, this pattern is so ingrained in me that it of course it came from these first days of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It's such a powerful thing when given just time to think about it at all, right? To consider and to draw the parallels and connections for ourselves. And I think part of, you know, what you said about not having a connection to it, right? Like literally being physically removed from your mother's body, physically removed at birth from breastfeeding. There's just this kind of, you're taught from the first moments of your life to override your needs, to override your instincts. And it goes on and on and on through our sexual experiences, how we feed ourselves physically, going into giving birth. It's sort of like, well, the doctor's there, it's gonna be fine. It's like, there's no consideration given to even what is your instinct. There's no holding environment for that process to take place, which I think is really the problem. Like, culturally, it's a problem, and on an individual level, it's happening in so many other areas that lead up to birth, that it's like, you know, we can really be having these conversations at any stage of human development, like how a person is relating to even the physical activities that feel good. There's just such a strong indoctrination to override what you actually need, override what feels natural to you. And I think medicalized birth is a huge contributing factor to that. Speeding things along with intervention after intervention. One of my colleagues just shared something today about the prevalence of having an induction scheduled because the doctor will be on call.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, this is not a medical reason to do anything, right? Like, it's,
right.
But this is so normalized. And the value given to nature, the natural unfolding of a process, and the, you know, back to the body, of course, the innate wisdom held therein, and at sort of this most precious time where we're already interrupting it and saying, you don't know what's best for you. You don't know how to do this. And so, of course, the role of a structural integration practitioner, it's like, it's such a foreign concept for most people, I imagine, that like, I could actually be put in a position, a physical posture, to know what I need and to trust that.
Yeah. To be empowered and to remember that, oh, my feet do hold me up. I love when you said that. That it's so, I feel like sometimes the things I talk about and discuss they're mundane, they're glossed over, and ignored isn't even the right word. It's just that it's not on our radar anymore. We have so many other things going on, and things are moving so quickly, like I said before, that what are you talking about? My feet are holding me up. What do you mean? You know?
Yeah.
And that was kind of the way I felt about the home birth. It was just like, once it happened, once you have the experience, you're like, oh my God, of course this is the way it should be. Mm-hmm. We don't know until we actually can have the experience, even if it's just for a minute.
Yeah.
Just be reminded of how it can be. And to be able to be present to that moment and really take it in.
Do you have any thoughts? And I'm sure you do, but any thoughts you'd like to share about ways to invite people into this consideration of another way?
Unfortunately, I see more and more and realize more and more that most of the time, a lot of the time, I won't say most of the time, it is us living in some sort of pain, some sort of discomfort, whether it's physical or whether it's dissatisfaction in our career or our relationship or illness. It seems like those are the things that bring people to this, okay, I can't take this anymore. These medications aren't working anymore. This going to this therapist isn't working anymore. Whatever it is no longer working. And people are like, I'll do anything to just feel better. That seems to be where we are. It just is, there's too much other stuff out there competing for our attention, that to simply say, hey, come here and have a new experience. Doesn't involve technology and some some sort of stimulant or something like that, it's a tough market.
Yeah.
It's a tough market for coming home, so to speak.
Well, and you spoke to it, we spoke to it earlier about kind of the general malaise that compels us to seek out a quick fix, even if it's like just momentary reprieve. There's so much more leaning towards that rather than almost, you know, I just sent out a newsletter. The subject was essentially healing sucks. Like,
yeah,
you're going to turn towards the pain and it's going to feel worse for a while to just like, I mean, when I got sober, it was like, this sucks way more than it feels good. It's like the moments of reprieve are so few and far between. And yet there's a deeper, you know, it's like the initial desperation was so intense that I can register like, well, I feel better than I did that day.
Uh-huh.
That day that I decided I have to do this if I'm going to live. And you know, my own experience being pregnant and having been a birth worker for almost 5 years and witnessing birth and studying birth and doing a lot of interpersonal work, I'm like, well, I basically have a bachelor's degree in this whole thing, and it's still so hard. There's so much when you know, I have chosen the route of home birth, and there's a lot that I have to take on myself, and my husband and I have to get really real with in our marriage. And I can understand with the pace of life that is our normal these days, like people don't want to add one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the irony is that of course you add on a lot more after the fact because so much goes unexamined, unspoken, not dealt with, glossed over in this massive total person transformative experience.
Yeah, we're onions. you know, there's always another layer.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned, you know, structural integration is process oriented work. And it's a reflection of really the work we're here to do for ourselves. I mean, we're here having this experience together, reflecting off of one another, and if we start to pay attention, shit gets real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully we don't have traumatic events that jar us into the present moment, but the present moment is where we have the opportunity to make a new decision and do something different. And, you know, I feel that if we can find the courage really to begin the work for ourselves, instead of trying to take a quick fix to make it better, and understand that this is a process. Being here in this world is a process, and it's an unfolding, ever-changing event that, you know, yeah, you think this is tough, but if you're present with it, it's a lot easier.
For sure.
You know, and the next thing can then happen instead of staying stuck. So wish that for everyone listening, so don't have to stay stuck. It's all choice.
Well, for those listeners who are in Houston, those lucky dogs, they can receive incredible care from you, my friend, Bill Green. I'll be sure to put the appropriate contact information, ways to find you, in the show notes. And I just thank you from the bottom of my heart for
so
being
much for
here.
having me. I had such a great time.
Thank you. And I hope that I'll be seeing you in person sooner rather than later. And for now, just thank you and continue being this incredible beacon that you are for so many. Thank you, Bill. Thank you so much for joining us on today's episode of the Sacred Body Podcast. I look forward to joining you again. And if you want to learn more about today's episode, please visit stacyramsauer.com. You can leave your comments, share far and wide, and we'll see you next time.